What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hash Rate Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. On today's episode, I am joined by Sam Shorzinski and Mason Jappa, the co-founders of Blockware Solutions. Blockware is one of the largest Bitcoin mining hardware distributors in North America. So I wanted to discuss some of the challenges surrounding the acquisition of new Bitcoin mining ASICs that people are facing lately. Also, we talk a little bit about the late, great Matt D'Souza, and they share some memories that they have of just his insane work ethic and how they all got together and started Blockware Solutions a few years ago. We also talk about hash rate derivatives and the development of those markets. And with Sam having a strong financial background, I also wanted to touch on the Square and MicroStrategy Bitcoin acquisitions and what that could potentially mean for Bitcoin. So we get into a lot. I hope you guys enjoy this episode. If you do, please make sure that you leave us a rating and review on your preferred listening platform. Now we've got a word from our sponsor, and then we are on to the episode with Mason and Sam. Enjoy. Boost your mind's performance with Ledin, a suite of institutional-grade services that can help you manage and optimize your digital wealth. Ledin works with Genesis, the most established institution in digital assets, to offer its clients access to savings and credit products at industry-leading rates and with unprecedented transparency. Want to boost your mind's revenue? Link your mind's payouts to their Bitcoin savings account, which lets you earn 6.5% APY on your Bitcoin. Their USDC savings account also pays out 10% APY, and these rates will be held until December 31st, 2020. Need to invest in more equipment but don't want to give up the upside on your Bitcoin? You can get a Bitcoin-backed loan from Ledin to access the liquidity you need without having to sell your Bitcoins. Want to amplify the returns of your Bitcoin? Ledin's B2X loan service lets you double the amount of Bitcoin you own through a Bitcoin-backed loan. There's no surprise that many miners use their services, including Hashrate, as the founders were miners themselves when they built this platform. If you want to learn more about Ledin today and how they can help you, head to ledin.io. That's ledin.io. Hey everyone, welcome to the Hashrate Podcast. I'm the Bitcoin Broski, here today joined by Sam Shorzinski and Mason Jappa from Blockware Solutions. Gentlemen, how you doing?
Doing well today. Thanks for having us on, Whit. I'm really excited to talk about many of our insights in Bitcoin and mining today. Sam, I'm sure, has the same vibes as well.
Yeah, great to be on. Thanks for having us, Whit. Looking forward to the discussion. Big fan of your work.
Thanks, Sam. Appreciate that. Getting right into it. For anyone who doesn't know, let's give a quick overview of Blockware and what you guys do.
We're a vertically integrated Bitcoin mining company, also with focus on altcoin mining as well. So not just Bitcoin focused. We first and foremost are one of the largest importers of mining hardware to North America. That's included Canada and the United States. Our main focus is the United States. One of our company's messaging is we need to bring hash power to the United States and try to geographically decentralize Bitcoin mining in general, as we see, you know, greater than 60% currently in China. Aside from selling hardware, we also operate a hosting facility in Calvert City. We're joint ventured through our mining fund, Blockware Mining LLC, with a company called Navier. And we are located in Calvert City, Kentucky. So we can host clients and sell them energy contracts at, you know, low cost all-in KWH rates to host their machines. And then finally, we also operate a Bitcoin mining pool. We're approaching, I believe, 180 petahash now. We're really trying to grow that. And that's, you know, part of our overall messaging. And it kind of gives us the vertical integration where you can buy hardware from us, you can host it with us, and you can join our pool. So we're controlling the whole spectrum there. And we're really excited about, you know, the opportunity with Bitcoin mining in general.
We are aligned in that vision for sure. So when it comes to the hardware aspect of the business and importing right now from China, it's been all the talk for the past couple of months, everything that's going on with Bitmain, hardware shortages. How are you assessing the current landscape?
So it's been pretty interesting as of recent. We're seeing a lot of mining hardware shortages in the space. You know, so there's supply chain constraints in general. So individuals are being forced to buy future batches if they want the latest and greatest newest generation equipment, such as the WhatsMiner M30S or the M31S or the S19s. So if you're trying to order those machines, you know, your delivery dates and timelines can be pushed to 2021. So companies like us, part of our model is we put up capital and prepay for these future batches, allowing our clients to get access to those future batches, you know, on a sooner timeline, as, you know, we typically have availability of those future batches prior to when you can actually purchase them. We're seeing a lot of interesting things in the used marketplace. A lot of the, you know, L3 pluses, S9s, lower generation, you know, S15s, T15s being funneled out of North America to countries like Kazakhstan, Venezuela, Iceland, all these countries that have cheap energy. So we're seeing a lot of movement of those equipment, you know, out of North America as, you know, large mining firms and companies, you know, are upgrading their cycle. We see these cycles and upgrades take place as a result of the halving and as a result also of China hydro season coming to an end.
So with the hydro season coming to an end, are you anticipating that we're going to see more of the Chinese miners move into North America now that they know that there's some favorable rates available here?
That's something that we've seen over the last 3 years. Consistently, we get reach outs from large Chinese miners, and there's a lot of reasons that they may want to move to the States. First off, politically, China's a communist society. There's centralized energy there. So there's a lot of farms that exist in China illegally. And, you know, at any point in time, they could have their mining operation seized and have all their hardware taken away. But we do typically see a correlation with the end of hydro season and a reach out from Chinese miners wanting to move their equipment to the States. We are in firm belief that United States is the best place to mine. You have, you know, a very nice cocktail of great energy rates, great politics, great support and operating staff, and in general, just, you know, brewing the perfect storm for importing Bitcoin mining in the future.
Yeah, and that narrative of decentralizing hash rate is very important. And I think especially so as more of these large institutions start to get involved with Bitcoin. I mean, I think everyone now has heard that Michael Saylor and MicroStrategy have added, was it $450 million in Bitcoin to their balance sheet? Today, the news came out with Square and the $50 million Bitcoin purchase. Sam, this is probably a great question for you. How do you view the difference in those market entrants with, you know, Paul Tudor Jones, who I think he purchased through derivatives products, and then, you know, MicroStrategy and Square, who are actually purchasing Bitcoin outright to hold on their balance sheets?
I mean, I think you're starting to see that true digital gold narrative emerge in the traditional institutional space, you know, as an inflationary hedge, especially since, you know, this COVID era, you know, QE Infinity got launched. Something, you know, a disinflationary asset, you know, that's attractive to the large macro, you know, strategists like Paul Tudor Jones, like Michael Saylor. Jack Dorsey's a tech visionary, so he gets it. Raoul Paul has over 50% of his net worth, he said, in Bitcoin, which, as a guy who's made his most of his money in currencies and bonds and traditional products, that's saying something.
Sure.
To your point, the decentralization of hash rate is important, and I think it fits into the growing trend of decentralized energy solutions. Look at the solar sector right now. It's roaring in equity. Look at Tesla, look at Bloom, Generac, this, you know, the fade the grid plays, you know, that Bitcoin's becoming increasingly reliable on renewables, even non-renewables, these nat gas farms. These are decentralized energy solutions that are fitting very well into this growing trend of energy decentralization products, whether it's renewables, whether it's just owning your own energy and infrastructure. So I think it's all shaken out pretty well. Everything's kind of starting to fall together very nicely in terms of the broader digital gold narrative and the adoption and the commoditization of hash rate.
So two things there. One, solar energy. Solar and wind, both are emerging. Do you think at this stage there's enough available, or the price point for deployment of solar is low enough to really support Bitcoin mining at this stage?
I don't think if you're going out and building a new farm, it makes sense. Like you said, the price point just isn't there. You want to maximize the capital you're deploying on hash rate. You don't want to deploy capital on unnecessary infrastructure.
Yep.
That being said, I mean, there's kind of a glut of existing solar and other, you know, renewable energy generating infrastructure that can very easily be repurposed to supplement mining operations. Now, obviously, you run into storage issues, things like that, you know, if the sun's down or the wind's not blowing. So whether that's supplemented with old fashioned grid power or whether it's supplemented with, you know, something on site like nat gas, like I said, I don't think it makes sense to waste unnecessary CapEx on that when you could be maximizing hash rate if you're going to get into Bitcoin mining. But if you already have the infrastructure in place, it makes a lot more sense when you're generating power and selling it back to the grid at 0.75 cents to just, you know, use that to mine Bitcoin instead.
Right.
One point to add there too, you know, we do talk to companies that are building out these massive solar farms, and there's a lot of tax advantages that you can get for building out a green energy network. You know, the SRECs and the tax credits that you get on your infrastructure, you can essentially combine the entire cost of your infrastructure, you know, into a solar project, which is, you know, interesting with mining. You know, all the, you know, transformers and servers and infrastructure can all be combined into a solar project because sure, that's the overall goal on the network. So I think I've heard some creativity with people that are being, you know, incentivized by the government to build out, these projects, at least in solar and wind and other areas with tax credits.
Mason, with regards to those tax credits, if somebody's going to leverage solar power or wind power, do you have any idea, like, when will those credits come into effect? Is it first year in operation or is it spread out over a decade? Like, how is that structured?
That's a good question. I mean, I believe you have to spread it out over several years and you have to, you know, give government approval of your project in the first place. So, you can get hammered with paperwork there. But to that point as well, a lot of farms are targeting opportunity zones, right? Which goes to your point of that 25% of government funding. If you can build a mining farm in an opportunity zone, which is something that, you know, Sam and Matt and I tried to target, you know, a long time ago in Georgia, you can get some really nice, you know, incentives and help from assistance from the government from a tax perspective as well.
You guys are in the infrastructure business, and this is something that I always find fascinating, and I want to know your opinion of. So we've got these people like MicroStrategy, like Square, like Paul Tudor Jones, and others that are gaining exposure to Bitcoin. Are they also looking to gain exposure to mining? And if not, how do we convert that?
I actually saw Michael Sayer tweet, you know, in the last couple of weeks of his specific interest in mining. I threw a couple lines on Twitter, you know, direct message, you know, just like, hey, we're one of the leading mining companies like in the States, let's talk. But what I think you're seeing is, you know, also companies like Galaxy Digital, they just announced they're opening up a mining arm. And Amanda Fabiano, who we know from Fidelity, you know, used to run their mining operations. So she joined Galaxy Digital. You have companies like BlockFi that have, you know, over $2 billion in assets now. They're starting to wanting to finance mining. You have companies like Digital Currency Group with Foundry that are deploying, you know, tens, if not potentially $100 million into financing mining operations. So right now we're kind of seeing a race in these large institutions to finance mining operations as they see the potential, as they see the proven use case. And if anything, it provides us a very bullish sentiment in Bitcoin and mining, you know, across the board.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know that there's going to be any converting them necessarily, those specific individuals, to mining, just based on what their current professions are. And, you know, if their money managers are doing it in one way or another, but there is significant increasing institutional interest on the mining and infrastructure side, as we're seeing, you know, the growth of these publicly traded mining companies, just like you see in the stock market with when gold rallies. We got gold miners like Barrick and all these other companies rallying in lockstep, putting in their best performance in years, just like you see institutions deploy to both the underlying asset and the infrastructure behind that asset. We're seeing the same thing in Bitcoin. The money managers, the people who are doing it, you know, as a form of treasury management, or, you know, an inflationary hedge, I guess, more than anything, they might not have the grasp of mining to, you know, want to deploy that capital on that. But I think it's when you see individuals and entities with significant amounts of high energy dense assets already on hand, already accessible, who see these other individuals, these famous investors taking positions, it gives them the conviction to say, hey, well, I already have, you know, cheap power. I already have the heavy electrical infrastructure. Why not just run some rigs? What I'm not using, you know, most factories aren't going to be operating at 100% capacity anymore. Most power plants, steel mills, coal mills, all that stuff's operating at fractions of its, you know, maximum capacity, what it was built for in the, you know, World War II and post-World War II eras. A lot of that is very easily leverageable, repurposable, and already on hand, like the, you know, the heavy lifting's already done.
Right. Well, it's like Greenwich, right? Greenwich Generation. They're a great example of the repurposing of power. And obviously they're a power plant, so it's a bit of a difference, but still along the same vein, right? They're seeing a better use for the power that they're producing. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday, and he was talking to an energy producer, and he was amazed at how studied they were on Bitcoin mining. You know, a year ago, if you would have talked about price per terahash with some of these firms, or potentially all of them, it would have been a shot in the dark. And now, I mean, they've done their research and they're looking to actively get involved in Bitcoin mining, which is super exciting.
Exactly. And for the generators, it's a very simple cost equation. What am I selling this back to the grid at versus what can I be converting it to Bitcoin for? And when you're, you know, you see Bitcoin trading for 10,500 or more, and you realize, wait, I can produce this for 1,200, 1,500, 2,000, whatever, you know, the light starts to click. And then, you know, those are the individuals that go down the rabbit hole. Like you said, Greenwich is a great example. They got a lot of great press. They run a good operation up there. I mean, our facility, Blackware Mining, we're not on an power plant, but we share property with a steel mill that's been around forever and, you know, not operating in its full capacity, and owns the substation on site, had the excess power available and got into mining because they could.
So like I've had Matt on the show. It was great to get to chat with him. I want to hear, how did you three come together to get Blockware started?
I've known Matt. Yeah. We were very good friends in high school. And then after college, before I got into FX trading, he was in management consulting, and he kind of mentored me on, you know, the stock market, even because I really didn't follow individual equities very much, but in terms of his methodology and all that, we started meeting, jamming every day, personally investing in Ether specifically back in late 2015, early 2016, you know, only used buying Bitcoin because you needed it to buy Ether. It was just, you know, really sold on the smart contract decentralization. You know, they're like, oh, well, as a currency function, you know, it's only a matter of time before, you know, government shut that down. It just didn't really make sense to us. Mason's actually the one who identified the opportunity in mining specifically, you know, the mining hardware market. I'm going to let him kind of dive into that. Before him, we were pretty, Matt and I were pretty big Ether evangelists. Didn't devote too much time to going down the Bitcoin mining rabbit hole specifically. Luckily, Mason did.
I started Ethereum mining with GPU miners in like late 2015, early 2016.
Love it.
And then I just saw the ability to have and purchase ASICs. And you know, specifically the S9 was very interesting. So one of my best friends actually just bought a house with an unfinished basement. We decided that we were going to build our own little mini data center in his basement. We already had our Ethereum rigs running down there. So I'm not kidding you. We had like a high CFM, like airflow, hot aisle, cool aisle. I have this amazing video of what we designed. And at one point we had like over 60 servers in there. But what I saw when I was, you know, got all these machines set up was that there was, first off, major fragmentation between China and the US in the process of ordering a machine. It was really hard to buy machines. You had to time the ordering cycle, and you needed a certain amount of like Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin available, which was kind of hard to get at the time, right? And then secondly, you know, once I would receive my machines and plug them in, the profits were off the chart. And by the time like I received the machine 2 or 3 months, you know, from ordering it, it may have doubled or tripled in value. So I actually met Matt through one of my best friends that was in my fraternity in college at Indiana University, and Sam as well. So they came in to visit, you know, we all hit it off well, you know, that was like 10 years ago. And I knew Matt was, you know, running a Bitcoin hedge fund and one of the smartest people I know, and same with Sam. So I called them up, and then we all lived in Chicago at the time. And we met, you know, together at Matt's house, and we just co-founded Blockware Solutions on the spot, you know, with the idea that we were going to sell miners to folks in the United States and do it for a fixed cost and try to fix that fragmentation that exists between China and the States. And, you know, from there, we've grown heavy since. I remember our inception, actually. Our first investment was we bought some D3s. Truly, the only capital we put into Blockware Solutions was 30 grand just to buy these D3s. By the time that we received them, they were, you know, already worth nothing and had.
Our first investment and a complete loss just evaporated. Yeah. And from Welcome that point crypto. On, we... From that point on, we focused on making sure to manage that currency risk a little bit better, both in terms of getting that Bitcoin over to them, making sure we collect from clients beforehand for the more obscure stuff that we don't want to hold inventory on. For a while, soured us on the inventory model for quite some time, actually, to where we were just doing pre-orders on behalf of individuals. Who, as Mason said, these windows would open up at 1-2 a.m. They'd announce on Twitter 12 hours earlier. So, you know, wiring was out of the question for most U.S. retail participants looking to buy rigs. And a lot of them are like, all right, well, I know how to send Bitcoin. They buy Bitcoin. They don't know when the batch is getting released. They think they're getting 10 mining rigs. Bitcoin depreciates 30%. Yeah. They're not getting what they think they're getting. So basically, to alleviate that currency risk for individuals, to smoothen out the comfort of dealing with China directly, still is kind of a black box, but it was even more so back then.
Matt was an absolute unit. And I think in mining, he was someone that everyone very highly respected and looked up to. And as friends and as business partners, I'm sure his loss was unexpected and terrible.
Yeah, I mean, the loss is obviously devastating. I've never known a wiser or tougher individual like to achieve the things Matt achieved across not only mining, not only crypto, but just professionally and in life in general, and all the, you know, people he touched. Most people, you know, won't do a fraction of that in a lifetime. I couldn't imagine going through the struggles he was going through for the last, you know, 7 years and just taking it all in stride. He never wanted to be the best CEO who was sick. He just wanted to be the best CEO. You know, he never let anyone know quite how bad it got at times. And Mason's obviously, we were all talking, you know, multiple times a day for the last 4 years. Multiple times I witnessed him getting a bone marrow biopsy. I mean, if you're not familiar, it's a still pretty primitive procedure to where you're getting a corkscrew drilled to take a sample of, you know, the bone and like your lower back or pelvis. And this maniac turns down pain meds because he's got emails and calls to respond to while he gets it. And he's just a machine. You know, we're just trying to do our best to follow his example.
He was a relentless force. I mean, I'm not kidding you. We used to take meetings in hospital rooms with Matt, you know, getting treatments during the meetings. And to Sam's point, you know, he didn't want that publicized. He was just such a unique individual, especially with that. It was very common. You know, he didn't sleep very much, which is a very interesting trait that you may find in an individual. So he would, you know, send like hundreds of texts and emails to Sam and I between the hours of like 2 and 6 a.m. of like strategy, you know, things that we should focus on. He was really like a major mentor individual for both of us. You know, I miss waking up to the litter of texts that I received from Matt every morning. And a lot of it was just, you know, him just spitballing like a million different ideas. His brains never stopped churning. Blessed to have known him, and we'll miss him. You know, the transition's been tough, but, you know, I think Sam and I have stepped up and continue to scale. You know, Blockware is having our best year ever. And, you know, to keep on his legacy, we're going to keep going and keep on moving on. And that's what he'd want us to do. So.
Absolutely. As you guys continue to grow and scale, and I'm sure you've looked at this already, but the commoditization of hash rate is something that I find intriguing, to say the least. The market seems a little bit immature still, but how are you guys viewing this commoditization, specifically the derivative futures forwards that are starting to circulate, but don't really have all of the traction that I think they will in the future?
I agree. I think it's inevitable and it's going to get pretty exotic. And I'm not sure long what type of time frames and how much liquidity is going to be and stuff like that. But like you said, it's already starting to pop up. I think the true commoditization will come from like the mining operators first. We're going to continue to see more and more, you know, energy producing or standalone energy infrastructure, low power guys, institutional grade, consume more and more of the hash rate, and that'll be internationally. So obviously Kazakhstan, South America are becoming hotbeds, great for the old equipment to filter to. North America's got some catching up to do, but it's trying to play its part, it seems. I think that's where we'll see that commoditization come in first. And then once to where the spreads are a lot tighter between your cost of production and what Bitcoin's trading at years down the road, where those energy producers and those large energy consumers, you know, have become the backbone of the new miners, are going to have to hedge, are going to have to make sure, just like these gold mining companies have to do. They have to go in and, you know, hedge their production accordingly. I just don't know if it's really anywhere near there yet. I think a lot of the largest miners in the world aren't even probably considering it that much.
I share that sentiment with you. You know, guys, as hash rate continues to grow and as an asset class, Bitcoin continues to grow in value, how are miners going to fare? With all these new opportunities at cheap energy and more companies that want exposure, difficulty is going to continue to increase. How are you viewing this from a business standpoint? I mean, does it become less advantageous over time with mining? What are your thoughts?
Fundamentally, a miner is truly an individual that is the most bullish on Bitcoin, you know, comparatively to anyone else, you know, in the space. Right. So a miner has a competitive edge in that they're generating Bitcoin at a cost that is cheaper than acquiring Bitcoin on the free market. And, you know, miners have a longer term sentiment and outlook. If you're entering mining, your outlook for ROI should be 2 to 4 years. So when you're trying to calculate what's the value of my miner and what's my return, you should take the mean value return over a 2 to 4 year cycle. And if you're pricing out hardware, then truly the price of hardware is the net cash flow that your miner is going to receive over the time frame that you believe that miner is going to run. You know, Bitcoin in general and mining in general is very cyclistic, right? We just went through a halving. Bitcoin is truly a very unique financial asset with that it's dictated by monetary policy that is controlled by code. So there's no changes in that code. And, you know, traders and miners love that this policy has certainty. So miners can be bullish and capture the opportunity if, you know, if Bitcoin takes off, you know, more so than anyone else. You can also think about it with that mining hardware is perfectly positively correlated to the price of Bitcoin. And this is something that we found through our research. Definitely go to our website, check out some of our historical research, but we mapped the price of Bitcoin to the price of hardware. So you'll find if Bitcoin doubles in price, there's a high likelihood that machine prices also will double in price. So you're kind of getting double exposure when you're buying hardware mining to Bitcoin. As well, just one more point, miners are also investing billions of dollars in infrastructure and facilities. Those are hard assets that have value. You can resell a transformer fairly easy. Energy as a commodity is very valuable and something that you'll see will increase in value over the years. So you have a lot of energy speculators that are like, hey, I want to set up, you know, 10 megawatt mining farm. farm in 10 years. This energy alone of 10 megawatts can be, you know, worth more than the Bitcoin output that I'm receiving. So
sure.
There's just so many plays you can have. And I think it's an interesting subject that, you know, that we could talk about all day, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it was just over $5 billion in infrastructure was deployed in 2019. I'm sure that number will be up this year.
It's going to keep getting more and more competitive. I mean, miners have to be extremely cognizant of, you know, what their operational costs are, making sure those costs are fixed so they don't encounter any surprises down the road, and then maximizing their capital deployment on cash generating assets, more hash power, more mining rigs, as opposed to building out unnecessary infrastructure that, you know, to Mason's point, it should, you know, it's not a bad thing. It should likely pay off, but that's if you're operating at a large scale. You know, for the average miner, there's definitely opportunities to capitalize. You're not going to buy the low and sell the high in Bitcoin, right? I mean, it's just, it looks a lot easier in hindsight, right?
Right.
I mean, look at the failure rate of crypto hedge funds from like 2017 to 2019. It's like 65%, 62, 65%, something like that.
Yeah.
And these are professional fund managers who blew out. They caught the rally and then they still blew out. Mining is a very attractive way to gain exposure to Bitcoin without purely dependent on that price volatility. Bitcoin goes sideways or downwards. If your energy cost is low enough, you're still generating Bitcoin inventory. You could sell it to pay for your electricity bill, so it's not costing you anything, and you're creating a war chest of Bitcoin inventory that, like I said, even if Bitcoin's going down where you would have lost investment, you're increasing cash flow and steady cash flow, and it's paying for itself. A lot of it depends on the type of investment one's looking for, their type of risk threshold. Do they know how to risk manage if they're dealing in the underlying asset?
It's not likely that anytime soon you'll be able to buy $3,000 Bitcoin, right? But you can mine it at that cost. So there is the ability to accumulate in that fashion, but having the long time horizon is very important. I think as you guys have mentioned, and we've talked on the show before, as the market matures, there will be more people that want to gain exposure just because they have a longer outlook on Bitcoin. So it's all very exciting for sure. With regards to the operation that you guys have in Kentucky right now, how many megawatts do you guys have available?
It's a great question. So we're currently in an expansion phase. We have the potential to grow our site to 70 plus megawatts. And we're also looking at acquiring, you know, a warehouse in the region to expand even further. And, you know, right now we have about 15 megawatts running of our self-mine equipment that we raise capital for through Blockware Mining Fund. So we operate, you know, a self-mining fund with some very unique strategies that has allowed us to be successful there. And then secondly, you know, our hosted clients. We have hosted clients that host machines with us. We have a very well-run facility with, you know, 24/7 tech support, repair specialists on site. I think it's really important from a hosting standpoint that you have a well-run facility. You know, we've seen, just like Sam was mentioning with hedge funds that have blown out over the years, we have seen just as many, if not more, hosting facilities, you know, go under. There's so many stories and we could have a whole podcast discussing some of the things that we've heard or have seen. But, you know, it's really exciting with what we're doing in Calvert City. It's a great place that we have, you know, the perfect storm brewing, as I said earlier, with a good energy contract, good politics, a great operating team, and we have machines on site. So if you're a retail miner or you're an individual that wants to get mining within 48 hours, you can reach out to us and we can have you mining within 48 hours and a hosting contract signed. I think that's a unique pitch that, you know, people really like and strive for when they're trying to enter mining.
100%. The shorter the delay between money out and Bitcoin in, I mean, that's the ideal situation, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like someone sees Bitcoin, you know, we see high correlations with Bitcoin price and our inquiries. You know, Bitcoin jumps to 13,000, we get a lot more inquiries and people want to capture that, and they're buying machines and they want the machines now. So, you know, you have to decide what you want to do. Do you wait for the S19 to come in January, or do you deploy, you know, some S19 pluses now? You know, I mean, there's good arguments for both, and I think both are good bets.
It's so exciting to me. I mean, mining continues to captivate me, and there's always so much that I'm able to learn. Having conversations like this, selfishly why I do the podcast, right? Like I like to talk to smart people and learn from them. And obviously you guys have got years of experience that now I can glean from. So it's great. What is it about mining for you guys that just continues to keep you excited?
I mean, it's an energy arbitrage. It's power. One of the most fundamental assets that there's not going to be any shortage of people needing power, of people generating power, and of better uses to optimize it. And I think Bitcoin offers that for a lot of, you know, struggling and upcoming operations. The problem is, you know, occasionally you'll have sporadic demand to where it exceeds thresholds, but most of the time you're operating at below capacity. So why, if you can operate at full capacity, make more money and then be able to toggle those mining rigs off and divert that power?
Just to add too, I think it's fascinating with that it's a global competition and people love competition, right? Mining, your goal is to have an advantage over your fellow miner. You can get advantages in several different ways. As Sam mentioned, having cheap energy. Another advantage you can have is having the latest equipment. If you buy an S19, your machine is better than 80% of the people that are mining on the network. It also has some pride and other factors involved. It kind of reminds me of like the space race, you know, back in the day, you know, China versus everyone else right now, right? Yeah. Like it's a race to see who can get the most hash up and running the fastest. And then, you know, down to its roots, Bitcoin is such a fascinating thing to be involved in. It's an early stage technology. People love the idea of it and the new financial system aspect of it. And I think that attracts, you know, a lot of people in general and then leads them down research, which takes them into mining. And it's just a really fun space to be involved with, very exciting. And, you know, every day I wake up excited to go to work. I think that's fun.
That's a win. That's a win for sure. You know, Sam, Mason, guys, this has been great. I've enjoyed this conversation a lot. As we wrap things up, I'd love for you to let everyone know, if they don't already know, how do they find Blockware and what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so go to blockwaresolutions.com. That's easily the best way to get in touch with us. You'll find all of our historical research where we've been mentioned in the media, a lot of our Excel models and historical findings. You can fill out a web form on our website that, you know, directly to our email.
Subscribe to our newsletter for our research.
We love to jump on calls and, you know, we're educators. You know, you can talk to Sam or I, you know, co-founders, you know, within a day of getting an inquiry, you know, or email, phone call. You know, I text many of our clients. We're available and we like to be transparent and there for our clients. So.
Awesome. Well, Sam, Mason, thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Look forward to doing it again sometime. And to all the listeners out there, appreciate you guys for tuning in. We'll talk to you all again very soon. Thanks for listening to Hashrate Podcast, a Hashrate Media production. If you enjoy great mining content, head over to hashrate.com today and register for Difficulty Adjustment, our free weekly newsletter providing the most actionable information on Bitcoin and mining. That's hashrate.com. Also, remember to head over today and give Hashrate a follow on Twitter. That's @Hashrate @H4SHR8. Thank you again for tuning into the show. We'll talk to you all again very soon.